I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, cheap computers for the developing world. It's the next big thing. But first, it's time for Wisdom Watch, our conversations with leaders who've gone before us to give us perspective on the issues of the day. Today, we talk with retired U.S. Air Force Brigadier General Wilma Vaught. She was not only one of the first women in the country to hold that rank, she was among the few in the world. Known for her business savvy and management expertise, her success helped clear the way for other women to pursue a career in the military. We want to talk about how she found her way in the world of the Top Guns. General Vaught joins us now from our studios in Washington. General Vaught, welcome.
I'm delighted to be with you today.
What made you want to join the Air Force?
For me, graduating from college in 1952, when women were supposed to be teachers, nurses, get married, or be secretaries, when what I wanted to do was to be in charge, I worked for a large company, and it was very clear to me that I would never have a chance to move into management. And so when I had the opportunity to perhaps get a commission, and they said I could manage and supervise, I was interested.
You served in Vietnam. You were the first woman to deploy with the Strategic Air Command Bombardment Wing, as I understand that.
That's correct.
And what'd you do?
I worked at headquarters, Military Assistance Command Vietnam, which was the big headquarters in Saigon. And so I lived downtown about three blocks back of the presidential palace. Every day we got on a bus, and I mean every day. We worked 7 days a week and rode down to headquarters MACV. And I worked in the comptroller organization in management analysis. And then I also was the liaison for the headquarters with the auditors.
Were you one of the few women there?
I was one of the very few women at headquarters MACV. I was one of four.
Sounds surreal.
It was. I remember one of the things that impressed me so much. There was a French hotel downtown. In fact, I think it's still there in the heart of Saigon called the Majestic Hotel. And I remember one evening going to dinner there, and we're sitting at a table and up on the roof of the building. There's a fellow playing the piano, playing music from the 40s, basically. There is linen on the tablecloth. We're eating off china with silver. And we're by the Saigon River. And across the river, we can see helicopters dropping flares to be sure that the Viet Cong are not there. And we can hear the rumble of B-52 strikes off in the distance. And I remember thinking, you know, who would believe that you would be sitting here in this environment like this in a war zone, hearing the sound of bombs, seeing the flares, and just, you know, as if there were nothing wrong anywhere, sitting here eating a very nice dinner.
Did you feel you had to prove yourself? I understand, but your physical circumstances were not as taxing as they were for many other people. But did you feel you had to prove something, being a woman?
I guess the thing that I always felt was that since I was the first woman to be in every job that I ever had, that I had to do well so that some other woman would have a chance to be in that job too. I felt it was very important to blend in and mix, so I always tried to do that, but I also tried to hold my own.
How was it like for you when you came home from Vietnam?
My mother and my aunt met me at the West Coast when I came in. When I got back home to my home community, which was in a rural area in Illinois, you know, they were very proud of me. So I never experienced what some did of meeting up with people who were screaming at them that they were murderers and all those kind of things.
How do you feel now that the country views the Iraq War veterans and veterans of the war in Afghanistan?
Oh, I think that there's a world of difference. Even though there is disagreement with the administration, there is a great pride in our service people, and there's far stronger support for the military than I can remember in all the time, and that's some 40-some years that I've been associated with the military one way or another. It's been over 20 years since I retired when somebody finds out that I was in the military, just as they do for those in the military now. Somebody will say, well, thank you for your service. Well, you know, for me, that was quite a while ago. I've gone on to do other things since then. But there is that feeling now. And I just think it's a wonderful thing for the service people of today.
I wanted to ask you about a less attractive side of military life, and that is the question of these sexual harassment, sexual assault scandals that have taken place at two of the service academies. And the Air Force Academy has been, I think, particularly in the public eye for the treatment of some of the students there. And I'd like to ask you what you think that's about.
It's a continuation of the feeling that has existed for decades among some men that there's a limit to what women should be able to do in the service.
Did anybody ever say that to your face, though, while you were doing your job and the performance of your duties? Did anybody ever say, you know, you really don't belong here? Was that ever actually that bluntly said?
I can't recall that it ever was. I think the biggest difficulty during the time that I was going in had to do with the restroom issue. That many of the buildings had not been built for women to be there, particularly like on the flight line or someplace like that. And so I can well remember being assigned to go down to the missile building, the air-to-ground missile. I was supposed to do a study down there. And then somebody said, oh, you know, you can't go down there because we only have one, we don't have a restroom for women. I said, well, what kind of facilities do you have? And they said, well, we have one restroom. I said, does it have a door? And they said, yes. I said, well, then you're either in it or you're not in it. And they said, yes. I said, I don't think we've got a problem. You know, even in this conflict, I remember not too long ago talking to a young Army sergeant who arrived there. She was a vehicle driver, and she got to where she was supposed to work and was greeted by the sergeant saying, we don't want any women here. So it hasn't totally gone away. And I hope someday we get rid of this thing that there isn't a place that women don't belong.
To those who say that women are the creators and sustainers of life, and that those who are the creators and sustainers of life should not be on the front lines, that it is not for them, it's not good for society, what would you say?
Well, my observation is that biologically it takes two to create. Men have just as much responsibility for children as women do. And of course there are instances now that we have men who decide to stay home and take care of the children while their wives work at a career. So I think the important thing and the direction we should be moving is that people have an opportunity to decide what works best for them.
Did you feel you had to give up a family to continue your career in the service?
Well, I never was interested in being married for longer than 15 minutes, and I didn't think that was long enough. So I stayed single, and I never had any desire to be a parent, and I think probably the world is better off that I never was one.
I don't know about that.
I have done my parenting indirectly by helping family members and people all along the way to try to further their careers.
I was going to say, you're being too modest. You've been a tremendous mentor for many women in the service.
Not only women.
You're right.
I've worked to help a lot of men along the way, too. I just want to see people do what the Army had a saying for, which I thought was the best slogan they ever had, which was, be all you can be.
And finally, before we go, I wanted you to tell us about the Women's Memorial Foundation. You were one of the chief instigators of the Women's Memorial, the Memorial to Women in Military Service, which is at the located at Arlington National Cemetery. Tell me why that was important to you.
I would like to say that it was my great idea. It was not. It was some other people's idea. I was sort of the implementer. I'm the one who was in charge of getting a site, getting a design, getting the money, getting it built. And as I got started with this, you know, I went through a phase when I thought, well, should we really do this? Because we have worked so hard to be integrated, and here we're taking a step where we're setting women apart. But as I talked particularly to the women in World War II, and I saw, you know, how little recognition they had ever had for what they did, it increasingly became clear to me that there was a story to be told, that we needed to capture that history, and that it was something we should do. You know, as women continue to serve and the mission of what they do changes, as it has so much during these recent years with the Iraq-Afghanistan conflicts, those stories will have to be told. And so I'm just proud that there's a place that women can go to and see what their history is, see what other women have done, see what their accomplishments are, to see where they fit in the chronology of history, what women have done for the security and movement forward of this nation.
Brigadier General Wilma Vaught is retired from the Air Force. She is currently the president of the Women's Memorial Foundation Board of Directors. General Vaught, thank you so much for speaking with us.
It's been a wonderful experience.
And if I may, thank you for your service.
Thank you.